Dear members of the Mahasanghas, novices, and devotees, good evening. My topic today, as you have seen just now, is the Sangha, right? I'm talking about an ideal community of the Sangha. So the contents for tonight's talk of this topic would be categorized, divided into 8 sections. As you have seen from the slideshows here, I will talk on this 8 aspects of the ideal community of the Sanghas. And the first one is the arising of the Sanghas and the meaning and significance of the Sanghas. The third one is the position of Sanghas in the Triple Gem. And the fourth one, I will talk about attributes of the Noble Sangha. And the fifth one is the historical changes within the Sangha. And the sixth one, I will deal with the Sanghas and the social works. And of course, the welfare of the Sanghas. And the last one is very important. That is, how can we do to sustain a strong Sangha? As we all know, right, 2 months after the Buddha's enlightenment, the Buddha preached his first sermon called the Dhammacakka Pavattana Suttas. Right, you can see from the LCD screen here. Okay, the Dhammacakka Pavattana Suttas. I believe that most of you had heard about this and know about this sutra. And this sutra is very important because it is the first discourse preached by the Buddha. And on hearing this, the Kondanya, right, the group of the 5 disciples, right, one of them called the Kondanya, he gained the Dhammacakku, right, the eyes of truth, as the first glimpse of Nibbana. And Kondanya, later on, he asked the Buddhas for the ordination, and he was admitted as the first Sangha members. At that time, there was no formality or any ceremonies, you know, conducted for the Kondanya to become the members of the Sanghas. Alright? So the Buddhas use the word ehi bhikkhu san lai bicho. You know, ehi bhikkhu comes, all bhikkhus. Yeah? Come bhikkhus. So this is just a very simple ordination, or we could call the ordination improper, for the Kondanya to become the first members of the Sanghas. So until that time, there had been only the Buddhas and Dhamma. There was no Sangha establishment yet. So this event, right, the conversion of the Kondanya into the Buddhist order, marks the completion of the Triple Gem of the Buddhas. So when we are talking about the Triple Gems of the Buddhas, it consists of these 3, right? The first one is the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. So the first Triple Gem was established, right? The Triple Gem, 3 Gem, was established after 2 months after the Buddha's enlightenment. So what should be noted here is that the arising of the Sangha, okay, strictly speaking, it was the arising of the first members of the Sangha. So the Kondanya was the first disciples, and at that time they arose the Sangha. So they marks the completion of the Triple Gem. Now we look at the meaning and significance of the Sangha. So literally, the Sangha means community, sanchie. Okay, we refer to the community or the assembly or a group. You see here, we consist of Sangha. So in the broader sense, these terms also cover both the lay devotees as well as the Sangha, the monastic community. From the doctrinal perspective, this word Sanghas also refers to those who have already achieved any of the 4 stages of the transcendental spiritual attainment. So we can call that kind of Sangha members as the Noble Sanghas. So here we can understand one thing, that the Sanghas are divided into 2 groups. One is the noble sankhas. The noble sankhas are those who have already achieved the certain, you know, stage of, you know, the transcendental the attainment. Okay. Whereas for the conventional sankhas, are those worldly sankhas. They are not yet attained the enlightenment. When we are talking about the noble sankhas, then we refer to these four pair of sankhas and eight individuals. Right? You know these four pair of sankhas? Four pair of sankhas, who are they? Yeah? You know about the Pali words? Right? One is the Sotapanna, and the second one is the Sakadagami, and the third one is Anagami, and the last one is the Arahant. Right? And there are these four pair. When we're talking about the four pair, mean they are the people who enter the Sotapanna Magga and Sotapanna Magga. So the Magga and Pala, the path and the fruition consists of one pair. When we separate these two, it means that each pair consisting of two, then times four, it becomes eight individuals. You understand what I say? You have the Sotapanna Magga and Sotapanna Magga and Pala. And you have the Sakadagami Magga and Sakadagami Pala. Right? Likewise, you have the Arahan Magga and Arahan Pala. So, what is Magga and Pala? What is the path and the fruition here? You know, the path is something like an entrance. You know, the person walks through the entrance, you know, just one step before getting the Pala, before getting the fruition. So that moment before getting the fruitions are called Magga. It's just one moment preceding the Pala. You understand? So for example, you want to enter a house, you know, you have to go through the gate. So this gate is like a Pala. It is like an entrance. You pass through this entrance, then you get the fruition. So likewise, in this noble sankhas, these four individuals also like that. Before getting the fruition, you have to first come to the stage. You have to cross the entrance, and then you get the fruition. So when you separate these four pair, then you get the eight individuals. All right. Now I can talk briefly, you know, about this since we are dealing with the topics of the sankhas, and how to get the Sotapanna. Huh? I think all of us aim for that kind of spiritual, you know, the attainment. Right? So how to get into that, the Sotapanna? The Buddha said in this very life, if we practice the Brahmacharya, we practice the noble life, we can't get into the Sotapanna. Right? But how to get into it? Of course, the Buddha's lay down, you know, the practices, you know, for monks, even for lay people. Lay people even can get to that stage, not necessarily the monk. But of course, comparing monks and lay people, monks are more conducive. But doesn't mean that lay people cannot enter it. So you have hope here, right? Lay people had hope even to enter into the Sotapanna. That's why, before I comment, I'm talking about the sankhas. Sankha in broader sense also include the laity, the lay community. Okay. Now come to this Sotapanna. How to get into the Sotapanna, right? You know, there are these three sangyojana. There are these three bondages we have to come across. What are these three bondages? In the sutra, it says that Sakaya Ditti. I will explain in English later. And Silabhata Parama Arsha. And the third one is the Vichikiksa. Right? So the first one is the Sakaya Ditti. That is the view with regards to the self and pertaining to the self. Right? We are bound in the samsara because, you know, we adhere strongly, you know, to the self. We cannot release from the self. Right? So the very first step into the noble sankhas, that is to realize the anatta, the non-self. Without realizing the non-self, one cannot enter into the noble attainment yet. So the very first step is to realize that there is no self within, right? We are used to cling on the self, you know, from the beginningless time. You know, there is a conditioning forces that bind us, you know, from the beginningless time, that thinking that this is I, this is mine, you know, this belongs to me, You know, this is my body. I sick, I pant, I drink, I enjoy. All the time we are used to this kind of, you know, the self view. So in order to get into the stage of the Sotapanna, the stream entrant, then one must realize that there is no self. You know, the Buddhism is quite different from many other religion. You see, the Buddhism asks you not, there is no self-abiding. Right? Then the second one, the second Sangyojana, the second bondage is that one must realize on, what is that? Sila, Vrta, Parama Asha. Parama Asha means the abstention, the adherent, you know, attachment to the sila, mean a kind of, you know, the precepts. And Vrta is a kind of abstention. And usually most of the books have translated this word into the rites and rituals. And actually it is not, properly translated. You see, because looking at this word sila and vrta doesn't mean that we should not attach to the rites and rituals. Rites and rituals are very important for us because it stimulates, you know, our faith. It strengthens our faith. You know, when we worship to the Buddha, it strengthens our faith. You know, we perform ceremonies because we need that. You know, doesn't mean that a person should be completely abstain from that kind of practices. It is not. Because the sila here refers to the precept. There are so many precepts, you know, other than the Buddhist precepts. You understand? For example, in the times of the Buddhas, there are many ascetics that practice the Kao precept. You know, they base their life, you know, on the Kao precepts. You know how the Kao eat grass. Okay? Or they observe certain types of precept. They call it, you know, the dog precept. You know how the dogs sustain their life? How the dogs sustain their life? Huh? They eat the dung. Yeah? Okay? So thinking so, you know, these people, some of these ascetics, they adhere to these kinds of the precept. Thinking so, by observing it, one can reborn into heaven. So I practice it similarly, I can go to the heaven. Okay? So the sila doesn't mean refer to the rites and rituals. Okay? For example, you know, people have that kind of belief. Okay, here I'm not talking about anything. I'm talking from this sila vrta parama asha. It is stated in the text itself. You know, for example, the cow belief. You know, the cow is only eat the vegetables. Alright? By eating the grass and vegetables, they will go to the heaven. Right? So thinking so, you know, people believe by vegetarian. Alright? One can reborn. You understand what I mean? When I refer to the vegetarian, and this is only, you know, the precept I observe in order to reborn in the heaven. You know? Then people adhere to it, and it is the only means to go to the heaven. By such kind of attachment, you know, to such kind of belief, then we are saying that he still have that kind of bondage. So a Sotapanna is one who completely free from this kind of adherence, the attachment to these kinds of, these kinds of rites, these kinds of precepts, and these kinds of extension. Alright? Understand what I say? Huh? Or, in India, during the times of the Buddhas, you know, even now today, you know, there were ascetics, you know, they went to the Ganges River, you know, believing that when you bathe yourself, you know, in the Ganges River, you can cleanse, you know, your sins and, you know, purify yourself. Yeah, there are many people holding, clinging, adhere to these kinds of abstention. Then by doing such kind of purification, you know, then they can go to the heaven. Such kind of belief too also categorized in this kind of bondage. So Buddhist monks, they have a right view, you know, they are completely free from any kinds of, you know, these kinds of precepts, you know, and the abstention. They lead a very complete, pure livelihood. Okay? So this is the second one. And the third one is doubts. They have no doubts. They are completely free from doubts. They have so much faith in the Buddha, so much faith in the Dhamma and Sanghas. Understand? So, this three bondage, if you can get rid of, you become the Sotapannas. Of course, you can progress further to the second stage of sainthood. That is the Sakadagami. Okay, Sakadagami, how? How you get into that stage? Sakadagami. Huh? You get rid of your anger. There is no anger. Okay? Anger. And another one, you get rid of the Kama Raga. Kama Raga means the desire for sensual pleasure. You know? But when you come to the second stage of this sainthood, you just only to suppress it, not completely eradicate. You understand what I mean? It's just only to suppress. It means that this anger, hostility, and the craving for the desire at the very low domain and very subtle state. Okay? We are talking about the sensual pleasure, mean there is still a kind of attachment to the desire. You know, that desire doesn't mean in the very mundane state. Ordinary people full of desire. We full of clinging, attaching to the sensual pleasure outside, through our eyes, through our five senses. And the pratika also. That's why in the practice of the brahmacharya, in the practice of the spiritual life, monks usually, or even lay people, usually encouraged to practice the metta bhavana. You know, the cultivation on the loving kindness. You know, then the purpose of cultivating the loving kindness is to counteract the anger. You know, anger, hatred. So now come to the third stage of sainthood. The third stage of sainthood, of course, eradicate the earlier preceding five bondage. And he has at the same time also suppressed another five bondages. Okay, for example, like the Rupa Raga, you know, craving for the form spheres. Okay, Arupa Raga, craving for the formless sphere. Okay, and the third one, the mana, the pride, you know, ego. And the fourth one is Udacha. His mind still not very stable yet, you know, restless. And the fifth one is avijja. He still have a very subtle ignorant, you know, subtle ignorant. The ignorant doesn't mean the ignorant of ours, worldly people. Their ignorance is very subtle one. Of course, when you come to the stage of the saint, of the final stage, the arahant, you completely get rid of these 10 bondages. Understand? So these four pair and the 8 individuals are called the noble sangha. Those have not yet enlightened, we call conventional sangha. From the perspective of the Vinaya, right? Just now I have mentioned from the perspective of Dhamma. Now I come to the perspective of the Vinaya. You know, sanghas in general refers, you know, to the community of the monks, especially to a group of 4 monks and above, and who are required, you know, to present during certain ecclesiastical act. You know, when we are talking about the Mahasankikadanas, right? Mahasankikadanas usually consists of 4 months and above. I say, I want to do danas for, I want to come to join the Mahasankikadanas. Usually consists of 4 months and above. That is qualified to call the Mahasankikadanas. So this is from the point of the Vinaya, is a sankas according. You know, this in general is called the sankas according to the Vinaya definition, but not necessarily refer as part of the triple gem. So when we are talking about the triple gem, that sankha portion of the triple gem consists of the noble sankas. These 4 pair of noble sankha as well as 8 individuals. So now we understand that through the first sutras, Dhammacakkappavattana Suttas, we understand that the sankhas is divided into 2 categories. One is the noble sankhas and another one is the conventional sankhas. Of course, individual sankha may belong to both if they are so qualified. Because of the role of the sankha is so distinct and prominent, the term sankha is used exclusively in reference to the community of monks and does not cover the laity in its broader sense. Now you understand. So of course, in the Theravada tradition, this term is used only in connection to the monks, this term, the Sangha, not to the laity. Now we come to the third aspect, that is the position of Sangha in the Triple Gem. It is very important nowadays for a Sangha. We need Sangha. So members of the Sanghas are very important and necessary in the spread and preservation and propagation of the Buddha's message during his lifetime and long after his death down to the present time. And the Sanghas, they act as the principal guardian of the faith. Then without the Sanghas, you can imagine, if Penang without the Sanghas, how Penang community will be. The religion, the Buddhist religion will die off, isn't it? So Penang, the Buddhism in Penang is prosperous because of the contribution, the propagation made by the Sanghas. So the Sangha is very important in disseminating the Buddha's messages. So with the Sanghas, the religion can prosper, can endure. Like we have seen, you know, one of the purpose of establishing the court of Vinaya is for the continuation and establishment of the Sanghas. We can see long ago, like in the Kashmir, even in the Afghanistan, or even in the Bangladesh, olden day called Pakistan, those countries were Buddhist countries before. But of course, with the invasions of the Muslim, you know, and due to other factors as well, you know, Buddhism disappeared. Why? When we look at the problems, that is because when other invaders come, you know, they first will destroy the Sangha communities. Now, so that if you go to the Bangladesh, the Afghanistan, you can see a lot of Buddhist remains, you know, in those countries, but no Buddhist monks. You know, the recent one, the Bamiyan Buddha statue, they destroyed. You know, and you look at the Bamiyan Buddha statue. It was preserved and inherited and maintained and built by the Buddhist monks. What is the purpose of building those heritage? It's for the propagation of the Buddha's message. You know, to give the people's faith in the Buddhas, in the Dhammas, in the Sanghas. So it is very important to preserve. You know, I mean, it's very important to protect the Sanghas, because Sanghas are very important. They are indispensable in the spread and preservation of the Buddha's teaching. Like here, without the Sangha, the religion could not endure and prosper. So the Buddha says, it is the duty, right, of the Buddhist monk to protect the Buddha's teaching. Buddha's not mentioning about the lay people, but it is the duty of the Buddhist monks, you know, to protect the Buddha's teaching. No Buddhist monk, no Buddhism. So you can see that the relationship between the Sangha and laity here play a very important role. In order for the existence of the Sanghas, the support from the lay people is very important. If there is no lay support, the monk Sanghas, the community of the Sangha would not exist, and the Buddhism will die off. So you can see the relationship here. So we must show the gratitude to the Sangha. So, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, in the Buddhist countries, you know, lay people, when they come to the temple, you know, usually they pay respect to the Buddhist monk. You know, likewise, our novitiate program, we train them, you know, to practice worshipping, not only the Buddhas, but to the Sangha. Because we have to pay the gratitude. The gratitude is very important. It is like a nourishment that strengthens our faith and confidence. Because they are the people whom they propagate the Dhammas. Their job is marvelous. Yeah, without the Sangha, Buddhism would not exist. Now, talking about the propagation, you know, because of the social change, you know, the world also changed, you know, from a very conventional read, you know, the books into the electronic form. Now, propagation of the Buddhism has to done through, you know, the internet. I don't know how many of you know about the BuddhaNet. BuddhaNet, you know, one monk, you know, designed this website, you know, by Australian monk. He propagated the Dharmas, you know, by means of electronic media. So the society also changed, you know. So the monk's role in propagation of the Buddha's teaching also changed. We cannot stick to the conventional method. You know, we have to go far beyond. See whichever the fastest way to disseminate the Buddha's teaching. And monks have to get ready for that. So internet, a homepage, plays a quite important role. For example, you know, when I preach here, just only a very small group of people can understand, you know, just come and listen. But by means of this electronic, you imagine, when you preach, how many people around the world at the same time listens to your Buddha's teaching? So this method shows the fastest way of spreading the Buddha's Dhammas. The Sangha also demonstrates to us that it is possible to realize the Dhammas and become enlightenment. That's why lay people, usually, they turn to the Sangha for the advice, for the instruction. Now you can see the importance of the Sanghas. Usually, lay people won't go to the lay people for advice. They will come to the Sanghas because they have faith in the Sanghas. Sanghas are well trained. You know, they have faith. Because Sanghas, the member of Sangha will tell them the path, will tell them the way of practice to achieve a certain goal in their life. Now we look at the attributes of the noble Sanghas. I believe that this verse, this passage is very common to all of you. You may have heard about this. I recite once. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Ujupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Nyaya patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Samichi patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Yadidang chattari purisa yogani atta purisa pugala. Esa bhagavato savaka sangho. Ahunayo, pahunayo, dakinayo, anjali karaniyo. Anuttarang punya ketang lokasati. So, what is the meaning? We used to recite this every day. You know the meaning? You know the meaning of this? These are the qualities of the noble Sanghas. They are the example for us to follow, to practice, to seek the advice, seek the instruction from them. We must know this, the qualities of these noble Sanghas. Alright? So, the first one, it says that the Supatipanno, it says that the Sangha, okay, of the Blessed One's disciple who have practiced well. Supatipanno, practice well. Okay? They are well practiced. Su, well practiced. And the Ujupatipanno, what is the meaning? The Sangha of the Blessed One disciple who have practiced straightforwardly. They practice very straightforwardly. And the third one, Nyayapatipanno, means those who have practiced methodically. Nyaya means the method, the system. They follow the method very systematically. Okay? Samichi Patipanno, also the same thing. Yeah? It means that those who have mastered properly. And continue. Yadidang Chattari Purisa. That is to say, there are these four pair of men, Purisa, men, and eight individuals. And as I have mentioned already, these four pair and eight individuals. Esa bhagavato savaka sangho. These are the disciples, noble disciples of the Buddhas. What are the qualities? It says there are these five qualities. It says ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakinayo, anjali karaniyo, anuttarang punya ketang lokasa. So there are these five qualities. Now we look at the first qualities. What is ahuneya? Ahuneya means the noble sanghas are those worthy of offering. There are people who worthy of offering. Yeah? Offering of what? Offering of the four requisites. What are the four requisites the monk needs? Food, shelter, lodging, and medicine. So these are the four basic needs of the sanghas. Okay? So the novices here, they do a recollection every day, every now and then to recollect, you know, these basic needs. And the second one is a pahuneyo, worthy of hospitality. What is a hospitality? Hospitality. They are your VIP. When you see monks, you invite monks to your house, open your door to accept them, to treat them as your distinguished guest. Not only that, you offer them with good food, right? It's not I say, it's said in the sutra. Okay, it's said in the sutra. We serve them good food, yeah, good drinks. Treat them like your VIP. That's why it says, pahuneyo, they are your distinguished guests. And here I show you in the Singhalowada Suttas, it says that how a devotee should treat the Sanghas. You look at the fourth one. The fourth one, it says that he must always keep his house open to the religious teachers. Yeah. Usually in Sri Lanka, the practice, when they see the monk, they are very happy. They welcome the monk with the great door open. Not only that, when the monks come, usually they wash their feet, you know, clean their feet, and serve them and place them the seat on the arranged seat, you know, with the white cloth. They arrange nicely, and afterward they serve them good food, good drinks. They are your guests, you know, VIP, and must provide them with material requisites. Okay, so it's not what I say, but it says in the Singalovada Suttas. But of course, you know, besides these two, usually lay people have to talk to a monk with affectionate in their action, in their speech, in their thought. So these are the things. Now we come to the third one. Dakineyo, the third one, Dakineyo. Dakineyo means those worthy of gifts. Okay, worthy of gifts. Oh, what is this? What are these things? The gift. Some of you may think that this word is similar to the earlier one, the Ahunayo. Right? Offering, worthy of gift, more or less the same thing. But there is a subtle differences in this word, Dakineyo. Means that people give the offering, you know, to the Sangha with the expectations to go to the heavens. You understand what I mean? They have little demand. You know, they have little demand. Yeah, I offering these things, I make a sincere vow, sincere wish. I want to go to the heaven. You know, usually, monks' duties is not to teach the people, the lay people, to go to the Nibbana, but teach the people how to go to the heavens. Okay? So this Dakineyo, you know, teach them have faith. You know, when they offer something to the Sanghas, they have so much faith. They want to go to the heaven only. They want to enjoy in their next life. Yeah, they don't want to go to the Nibbana, because when you teach them, there is nothing said. They don't want it. Very dry. They say, I want to rejoice in my next life by giving these kinds of offering. Okay, this is called the Dakineyo. And Anjali Karaniyo means they are worthy of salutation, worthy of respect. Okay, as you know, when you come to the temple, when you see monk, it is of the nature, you know, automatic. You know, we will, raise our hand and show respect to the Sanghas. You know, this is a very good virtues. We must cultivate this to show our humbleness, you know, to show our gratitudes. These elements, these gratitudes are very important. They are the requisites. In the path of the lay life, even the monk, they need this kind of requisites to facilitate their practice to achieve certain goal. Yeah, lay people goal is to go to the heaven, but for monks, the goal is very definite, right? They want to go to the ultimate goal. Yeah, you see the difference. And anuttarang punya ketang lokasati. So it is the highest field of merits for the world. That's why you look at the monks' robes today. Okay, usually the monks' robes is designed in such a way that when you stretch it, you can see the design, the line of the rope according to the pedophile. Alright? And this reminds us that we are wearing these robes. We have to be careful of our own action, our speech and mind. Why? Because when the lay people, they look at us, they respect us, okay, they respect the Sanghas, then they will like planting the seed in their mind. And this seed will eventually grow and manifest, you know, and give results. So you can see the importance. This drop is to remind the lay people to cultivate the seed. To cultivate the seed. Not to fade, but to grow. Okay? How to grow? They have to come to the temple, offer dana again and again, listen dharma again and again, practice the sila again and again. You know, this is how the seed will grow. Otherwise, you know, then what is the purpose of the spiritual life? You see? So the spiritual life, remember, we are wearing these robes, we are carrying a lot of responsibility. It is very heavy for a monk. So that's why the monks need education. Monks need education. This education in terms of the spiritual education, I will come to that later. And you look at this verse, you know, from the Dhammapada, I would read English. It says, in this world, whatever gifts or alms a person seeking merit should offer for a year, all that is not worthy a single quarter of the reverence towards the upright. It means the noble Sangha, which is excellent. So, offer the gifts, dakineya, the gift, you know, to the noble Sangha can bring so much fruition, the meritorious, not only this life, but also future. This is the stanza taken from the Buddha's word. And you can find another one. A man may practice fire. You know, those days in India, the fire sacrifice considered the greatest sacrifice. The Buddhas, denounced that kind of sacrifice. All right? 100 years in forest, but a moment's honored, paid to the one who is self-developed and perfected, is better than that of sacrifice. And in the Majjhima Nikaya, you know, in the Majjhima Nikaya, medium discourse, I have already said, you look at the second part. This sort of assembly, to which a small gift, when given, becomes great, and a great gift, greater. You know, such is the assembly of the monk. And this sort of assembly, that is rare to see in the world, you know, such is the community of monks. The sort of assembly that it would be worth traveling, you know, for leagues, miles and miles, taking along provision in order to see. And in this Ittivuttaka, one of the discourse in the Kudakapatha, it is a minor discourse, you find this: among whatever communities or groups there may be, the Sanghas of the Tathagata, or the Buddha's disciple, is considered supreme, i.e. the four types of noble disciples, when taken as pair, the eight when taken as individuals. Those who have confidence in the Sanghas have confidence in what is supreme, for those with confidence in the supreme, supreme will be the result. These are the things. So you can see that there are so many passages like this extol the virtues of the Sanghas. And the recollecting the virtues of the Sanghas is also a type of meditation practiced. There is a practice, you know, recollecting the Buddha, Dhamma and Sanghas. And these are the things from the Anguttara Nikaya, Zenzibu. At any time, when a disciple of the Noble One is recollecting, when I'm talking about recollecting the Sanghas, his mind is not overcome with passion, not overcome with aversion, not overcome with delusion. His mind heads straight, based on the Sanghas. And when his mind is headed straight, the disciples of the Noble Ones gains a sense of the goal, gains a sense of the Dhamma, gains joys connected with the Dhamma. In one who is joyful, the rapture, Qing'an, the rapture, the tranquility arises. In one who is rapturous, the body grows calm and quiet. One whose body is calmed experience ease, you know, that kind of bliss. In one at ease, his mind become concentrated. So you can see that by recollecting the virtue of the Sanghas, one can come to the stage of concentration. So it is very important. That's why one must cultivate the faith. Here the faith is very important, the gratitude, the humbleness, you know, thinking of them, they are so important in propagating continuation of the Dhamma. So by thinking such, one can come to the stage of concentration. Now, I take another one that is found in the Samyutta Nikaya. When you recollect the Sanghas, monks, this is the Buddha's word, it says the bhikkhus, any fear, terror, or horripilation, horrified, you know, you may have, will be abandoned. Okay, for example, you know, in there are several passages like this, when you go for a long traveling, you go to the forest, you have any fear, horror in you, you can recite the Sangha passage. You understand? Supatipana Bhagavato Savaka Sangha, recite like that. Or Itipiso Bhagava Arahang, recitation of the Buddha's virtue, Dhamma virtue and Sangha virtue. By recollecting this, the virtues of this triple gem, any fear, any terror will be abandoned. Okay? And we look at the fifth one, the historical changes within the Sanghas. After 2 months of the Buddha's enlightenment, the triple gem, Buddha Dharma Sanghas, or the proper Buddhism, okay, the proper so-called Buddhism, at that time, no such word Buddhism. This, I coined it. Right? The proper Buddhism, you know, was established. And at that time, there was only 60 Arahan. You know, during the first Reni retreat, there were only 60 Arahans that spent together with the Buddhas. And after the retreats, the Buddhas, on his way to the city of Rajagaha, Sawi Goya Rajagaha, he converted another 1,000 disciples. It is said that, I think about 7 months after the Buddha's enlightenment, there were a total of about 1,250 monks. Okay, so this first groups of the Mahasanghas were directly ordained by the Buddhas. Okay, to such accomplished the Mahasanghas, the Buddhas dispatched them for missionary work and tell them, you know, monks, go forth for the good of the many, for the happiness of the many, out of compassion for the world, for the benefits, for the good, for the happiness of not only the men, but gods. Okay? Let not two go by one way, preach to the world the good Dharma, which is beautiful in its beginning, beautiful in its middle, and beautiful in its meaning. You can feel this message or not. You know, it is a very ancient message. You know, the Buddhas want the Sanghas to go out, you know, to preach the Dharmas. And not two in one group, but everybody go into different directions. Okay? So the Dharma can spread fastest, can spread far. So you can see the intention of the Buddha is to spread this teaching. This teaching is very beautiful. So when monk preach the Buddha's teaching, make sure that he preached beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end. You understand the passage of this passage? In order to arouse, you know, the faith, to increase the faith of those people have no faith, but to strengthen their faith. You look at this, the third one. This group of the disciples, they represented an ideal for spiritual training, demonstrating how a life of Dharma should be lived and how the ultimate enlightenment can be achieved. We're talking about the life of Dharmas, you know, the life of Dharma. What is this life of Dharmas? It is the duty of the monks to teach the laity, community, the life of Dharmas. The foremost of this practice, as you know, is a Dhana. You know, Dhana. It is very important. Even for monk, we need to cultivate Dhana. No matter for laity, for monk, Dhana is very important. So the Dhana is the foremost training of all the life of the Dharma. Yeah, you look at this. Okay. I mean, this is in Thailand. Right? Of all the gift of Dharma does excel. Okay, for example, the lay people, they offer gifts to the monk. In return, you know, monk give dharmas. Then what are the difference? You look at it. Lay people offer dana, we offer dana too. You know, but difference is here. The difference is that when the laity offers something that is of the material, you know, it's just only for temporarily. You know, they offer food. You know, after a few hours, again, we get hungry. But the different, the Dharma is that when we give you, you can reap the consequences, the result. Not only in this life, but the next life too. You get a lot of result. You can see the difference here, right? Look at these dhanas, right? And not only that, actually I have repeated this, you know, during my first night. But I think I need to show this because it's very important. I'm showing the path, you know, the Buddhist practice for the laities. It says that the first one is a generosity. The second one is a morality, and the third one is the cultivation. These are the 10 meritorious actions that a laity should fulfill. Okay? So these main categories, the first one is the dhanas. The dhanas consists of these three, like sharing and transfer our good merits and wholesome states with others. You are sharing. When you offer something, usually monks will lead you to share the merits that you have done, you know, with others. And the second one, you rejoice in others' merit. You know, if you are not capable of doing, but you are seeing somebody doing that dana, you rejoice over it. That rejoicing is also dharmas. And the teaching of dharmas, you know, don't keep to yourself the dharma, because dharma is so supreme, you know, so supreme. You know, whatever you heard, yeah, no matter how much or so little, go back and teach, you know, tell your husband or tell your wife, tell your children. That is important. Even that kind of teaching the dharma is also dharmas. And come to the morality, you know, 持戒, morality, sila. You are respecting to the worthy one. Come to the temple, you worship, you know, to the Mahasanghas. That is also a kind of morality. 恭敬. We must be humble, you know. If your mind is not humble, not soft, you know, not easily bent, you know, very difficult to absorb something. You know, you cannot listen to any teaching because your mind is so harsh, you know, so stubborn, you know, so egoistic. So this kind of training, the salutation to the worthy one, is to bend your mind easily to prone to that kind of teaching. You can absorb it and practice it for your own good sake. Another kind of service also. Service, your duty. It is the duty of the laity or the sanghas, you know, to protect the monastery, you know, that kind of service. And the third one, the cultivation. Yeah. The cultivation is hearing the Dharma, strengthening the view. Here the cultivation doesn't mean that you have to sit down. Okay? Most of the people, when they translate the Bhavana, they translate it as the meditation. Isn't it? But this meditation is quite wrongly translated. Why? This Bhavana has much more than that. Doesn't refer to the meditation as such. The cultivation means you have to make it come into existence. Make it to manifest. That's why you have to practice it again and again. Repeatedly. You get it? For example, you are doing dana, you are practicing sila. Doesn't mean that one and for all, you are fulfilling it. You have to do it again and again. You understand? Until that kind of fruition come to manifest in you. You get the joys, you get the calmness, you get quiet. When you die happily. You will go to the heaven. You know, it makes you to come into being. So it's called bhavana. Get it? So hearing the Dharma is very one important aspect. You come to the Dharma, you know, though sometimes the monk not speak very well, like me, you know, it's okay. You come, you can listen a little bit, no problem. Listen a little bit and try go back and recollect it. Huh? Then only strengthen the view. Sometimes we have so much problem, so much, you know, misunderstanding of certain things. But listen to the Dharma, we can correct our view, correct our understanding. You know, we have the inherent tendency in us, so much so that we cannot release, or we don't know, we are ignorant, we don't know how to get rid of it. So by listening to the Dharma, it strengthened the view. One day, you can see that, oh yeah, I realized something. That seems to understand something is important, because you will correct that kind of view again and again until you get the proper understanding. Understand? Now we look at this, the two main duties for a monk. When you become a monk, there are these two main... May I know what is the time now? There's no clock. What to do now? It's too late. Shall I stop here? I cannot. Yes, there are very important things behind. Anyway, I shortcut my things and we go to this. What can we do to sustain the strong sanghas? Alright? And yeah, looking at this, the correcting our own fault, change. I have here altogether, I listed seven of them. These seven of them is not only applicable to monks, but even to the laity as well. So looking at this in brief, okay? Correcting our own thought, changing our own mind, it is very important. And the teaching have to be implemented, how? Through the compassion, understanding the karma. Recognize that this emotional turmoil is not permanent, that it will pass, you know, and then passionately let it go by. In fact, there are a lot more to say here, but I hope that by looking at this, you can try to figure out yourself, you know? And I hope that in the future, we have time, we come and discuss more on these dharmas. Because dharma is so profound in the sense that very blissful. You know, when you can really put into practice sincere with your sincere heart, you can rejoice. You know, not just at the very superficial level, understand as a kind of knowledge. Not. It is not. So there are many practice, you know, trying to bend you, you know, to become a good person or good sanghas. And even the fifth one, don't add fuel to the fire. You should remain passionate and maintain respect. Isn't it? Usually people that add fuel in the fire and the whole thing get blasted and cannot help. So to maintain the sangha, yeah, even the lay people as well, don't add it. Remain passionate and silent. Okay, for example, a husband and wife, they quarrel each other. Then I think the best way is that wherever people scold you, you know, you just listen. Just listen. Okay? Just listen, be a very good listener. Just listen to it. Don't add any fuel in it. Just listen. By the time he finished, I believe, you know, half of his anger will gone. And the sixth, to develop love, concern, and passion. And the world isn't going to change for us. We have to change the world. How to change the world? To purify our minds. And the Buddha's last word, okay, this is very important. It says that all conditioned things are subject to decay. Strive on diligently. Anyway, Buddha can't help you. Buddha just show you the path. You have to help yourself. Alright? Okay, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we transfer the merits, sharing, okay, with all the sentient beings. Idang me dhammang asawa kayang wahang hutu. Idang me dhammang nibbanasa pacayo hutu. Sabe sata suki hontu. Idang me ngati nang hutu. Sukita hontu ngatayo. Idang no ngati nang hutu. Sukita hontu ngatayo. Idang vo ngati nang hutu. Sukita hontu ngatayo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.